This is the politicalbetting.com Polling Matters podcast. My name is Kieran Pedley, and we're on the audio only again this week. Tip TV continue their studio move, so if you can bear us, we'll be back in the flesh next week. But for now, I'm joined by fellow podcaster Leo Barassi to talk a little bit about the upcoming EU referendum. Now, as we know, in 6 weeks' time, Brits go to the polls to decide whether Britain should remain in the EU or leave. But what do we make of the plethora of polling data that's out there at the moment? And what is the current status of the campaign as we look ahead to the polling day? So, Leo, welcome to the show.
Hi, Kieran.
Before we actually get into the EU referendum sort of polling, which I think is the main conversation today, big news out of Wales this afternoon. Leanne Wood vying to be First Minister against all odds and tying in the vote versus Ciaran Jones. I think I pronounced that right.
Ciaran,
okay. And you used to work in the Welsh Assembly, didn't you? So I just wanted to get your thoughts on that a bit, because it strikes to me as quite astonishing that Plaid have tried to team up with the UKIP and the Tories, although they kind of deny it, to overtake Labour. I mean, what's your assessment of it all?
So I did work there back in 2002, and funnily enough, we're in a situation that's not entirely different from how things were around then in the election that just followed, in that what you see is, obviously, people who were broadly in favour of more proportional electoral systems tend to argue they make it more democratic, that what you get out of it is more representative of what people actually want. But then when you get systems like this and situations as we have now, where it's lots of different ways you can form a government, then actually you end up with potentially more power going into the backroom dealing and more horse trading potentially going on, which, I mean, whether or not we call it more democratic, I don't know, but it certainly creates a situation where it's quite hard for the voters to know what they're going to get out of it, because it can be lots of quite different coalitions or temporary alliances. But then, of course, the other thing that's coming out of this is the really weirdness of seeing potentially a temporary or a longer-term alliance between Plaid and UKIP, which
feels dangerous, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, it doesn't feel like this is where that many Plaid voters wanted the party to go. I think the initial reaction seems to be, and I think I'm going along with this, that this is something that has much more upsides for UKIP than it does for Plaid. And if it does go ahead, my instinct is it won't, and Ciaran Jones will stay in. But if it does go ahead, it legitimises UKIP as a serious player in the Welsh Assembly. Even if it doesn't, I think it's established them as having the potential to influence what happens.
Because it's all very well being a negotiating tactic, and I know that Plaid have said, well, we just submitted Leanne Wood as a candidate, and you know, we didn't organise this with anyone. Now, you can, let's just give them the benefit of the doubt and assume that's true. The only other votes in the Welsh Assembly are Conservative and UKIP, and the Liberal Democrats, that aren't Labour. So it's hard to make the case that you're somehow, oh, we didn't realise it was going to be Conservative and UKIP votes that were going to help us.
Maybe they thought Labour were going to back them.
Well, maybe. Who knows? But certainly one to look out for. It feels like just as you think that the elections are all over, something rears its head.
Who knows? Maybe we will get another one.
well, that's something to look out for in the coming days. But certainly a shock this afternoon. We're obviously going to talk about the EU referendum today. I thought it'd be useful with six weeks to go to try and make sense of the polls. I guess let's start with the so-called horse race. It seems to me that if we look at the excellent Britain Elects site, they've got a pretty good Google Docs thing that sort of brings together all the scores, and I recommend anyone listening to the podcast to follow them and to follow that spreadsheet too, because it's a really useful tool. And I was looking at this and preparing for something else recently, and it seems like the phone versus online difference remains, to pardon the pun. Phone polls have remain 8 points ahead on average, online, neck and neck. Then we've got this sense that the race is close because most of the polls at the moment are online, aren't they? And I think 9 out of the last 10 polls have been online. So maybe everyone thinks it's... I'm wondering whether everyone thinks it's closer than it actually is because of the imbalance between the two sets of polls. But then that only works if you think online is wrong, doesn't it? So, I mean, kind of, what's your take on the online versus phone thing?
So I think this is a moment where I need to be quite conscious of my priors. So I'm coming to this basically, look, I think Remain is going to win. I've always thought Remain is going to win. To be honest, I want Remain to win. I think I also have some sort of instinctive consideration that phone is just a bit better than online, and you get slightly better results. But I mean, the truth is, I think those are priors that we do need to evaluate and to question. So we've just had a very good set of elections for online polling. They largely got it right. Just because there has been some good analysis that said, I think it was Matt Singh, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. That looked quite closely and made the argument you can broadly look at these and put a result, I think, sort of 2/3 of the way towards phone. So fair enough. There is a bit of analysis that says that, but I think, given that online has proved itself just now, we should probably be a bit cautious. I think I've had a tendency to look at this and say, look, it's fine. Just because we're getting so many online polls, we shouldn't overstate how close it is. And, you know, phone is making it look like there's quite a big lead for Remain. But, you know, perhaps we shouldn't be so confident. I mean, they could well narrow between the modes, and that narrowing could well be closer to where online is at the moment.
Although I suppose if I was going to challenge that a bit, if you look at the elections that have just been up, there wasn't really much polling of England, was there? So, you know, I think London was pretty close.
Yeah.
Scotland was reasonable, although Labour slightly overstated, Conservative slightly understated, I believe. I think there were some polls that had the Conservative second, but I don't think that was the dominant view, although I might be wrong. So we don't have that England-wide polling, and as we know, England is, what, you know, 9/10, or maybe that's not quite as much, but, you know, it's a large majority of the votes. I mean, on Matt's paper, obviously Matt's been on the show before, I think that one of the things he points to is the sheer mechanics of how these different survey modes operate, which means that if you're online, chances are there's going to be a don't know option in front of you, so it gives you more of a chance to choose it, whereas presumably most phone polls won't read out the don't know, and therefore it kind of leads you, even before you have the so-called squeeze question that tries to force the don't knows to make a decision, it sort of makes you more predisposed not to choosing it. Now, I don't know what to make of that, because I suppose just because you make someone make a decision doesn't necessarily mean that they're confident in it. So I don't know if removing the don't knows there is false.
Or that they're someone who's actually going to come and vote as well.
Yeah, I mean, what's your sense of the don't knows? Because there's a big debate here about this, isn't there? And, you know, my assumption has always been that don't knows would break for Remain. And actually, there is something interesting here, whereas, as I've just said, online has more don't knows. So maybe when that comes down, Remain goes up in the online polls and they'll move towards phone. But I mean, how do you interpret don't knows? Because there's a number of ways of looking at them, isn't there?
Yeah, so traditionally, as you say, we would expect don't knows in a referendum where there's a status quo or a significant change option. We'd expect the don't knows as the election comes closer to break towards the status quo. Interestingly, as far as I can tell, and I'm sure people will correct me if I'm wrong, that didn't really happen in Scotland. As far as I can tell from looking at the polls, I wasn't able to see much of an effect of don't knows breaking towards no, as you'd expect from that model. So I'm a bit less confident in that. I mean, it's also the case that there aren't a huge number of don't knows, as far as I can see from the polls at the moment. And we've also got to anticipate that the stated turnout, the proportion of people who say that they will definitely vote, is almost certainly going to be higher than the number of people who actually vote. So whilst on the one hand we might be looking at don't knows and saying, well, there's this bunch of people who we're not sure where they're going to what they're going to do, whether they're going to vote, but there's also some people who at the moment we're considering that they are going to vote, and we're pretty confident that they're going to vote because they say they're going to, but actually we know that not all of them will. So you know, don't knows is one question, but there's also the overstatement of turnout, which is another question.
Well, let's talk about turnout, because it feels like that's going to be really important. And one of the things that I, when I was looking at the online versus phone difference, ICM did a test where they literally ran two online and phone polls side by side. And that's quite useful because, yes, of course, you can take the latest YouGov poll and the latest ComRes on phone and compare them. But this was the same firm at the same time, doing things as much in the same way as they could. And you could compare the two different samples. And one of the things that struck me was it got the usual results, 8-point lead for phone, I believe, neck and neck for online.
Yeah.
And I was trying to look at the differences in the samples and what it could tell us. And one of the things that I observed was, if you look at the Labour vote on the telephone, they broke for Remain 68-25. And if you looked at the Labour vote online, they broke for Remain 54-32. So basically, the phone sample Labour vote more likely to, like, more strongly for Remain. And I guess you can interpret that in a number of different ways. And there are people that think the telephone polls overstate the Labour vote anyway. But I thought that that sort of shows me that the more Labour Remainers you can get out, and the more Labour people that show up at all, the more likely you're going to get a Remain vote. But leaving that to one side, what do you think about turnout? Because, you know, it's a very difficult one to call, isn't it, in terms of what it's actually going to be?
Yeah. So as you say, clearly it's going to be crucial. So I had a look as well when I was looking at the Don't Knows in Scotland. I also had a look at how stated turnout changed over the course of the campaign. Up to about 6 weeks or so before the referendum, it was, as I recall, in the mid-80s. That's mid-80% of people saying that they're definitely going
to
vote.
So like 10 out of 10 certain to vote.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And then that went up in the last few weeks to the point where by a few days, or by the week of the referendum, it was in the high 90s. So it was in the territory of 95% or so saying that they're definitely going to vote. Now, clearly that was an overstatement. Clearly the turnout wasn't that high. But if that model is replicated now for the EU referendum, then I would expect that the share of people in polls who say that they're definitely going to vote is going to increase. I would expect it to increase, if it follows the same pattern, by about 10 points. So at the moment we've got something like 65% saying that they're certain to vote. I would expect, on the basis of Scotland, in the last month before the referendum, so starting in the next couple of weeks, that to increase to something in the mid-70s. Now, the significance of that for the result is that at the moment, a larger proportion of Leave supporters say they're definitely going to vote than Remain supporters say they're definitely going to vote. So it's about 68% of Remain supporters say they're 10 out of 10 certain, 76% of Leave supporters. So if the same thing happens, there's more space, there's more room for Remain supporters to say that they're definitely going to vote, for a greater share of them to say that they're going to vote. So, and there's quite a few ifs and sort of this, then this in this. So let's not be completely confident about it. But it's a sign as public interest in the referendum really kicks in the last month that stated turnout should increase. And by the way, I'm not saying that 75% of people are going to vote. I'm saying that that's what stated turnout will be.
You could probably knock 10% or so off it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Then that should, all being equal, favour Remain.
So that's so that sort of looks like general election turnout levels, doesn't it?
Yeah, right. Yeah, and it's interesting. I mean, what I'm saying there puts it higher than lots of other people have been saying. So I think others have been talking in the mid to high 50s or so. And I think what I'm talking about is suggesting it looks like it could be a bit higher. Lots of conjecture, but I'm, at the very least, I'd expect the turnout, stated turnout in the polls, to increase.
Because I suppose if you're saying that turnout is close to a general election turnout, it would be reasonable to think that, you know, the political balance of who's turning out is going to be quite similar to a general election, and therefore there'll be large numbers of Labour voters showing up. Because it feels to me that David Cameron's in this slightly bizarre situation once again, where he's got a referendum campaign where he is ultimately going to be judged. I think most people assume he's going to stand down if he loses, even if he says otherwise. But he's relying on the Labour vote to come out and deliver him that victory, isn't he? Mm-hmm. With a Labour leader that's not particularly passionate about it, or at least hasn't been until this point. But you wonder which way that's going to go. I mean, let's look at some of the underlying numbers, because one of the things I think can be telling is not so much the horse race question, but what's underneath it.
Yeah.
And there's been some numbers from YouGov recently, again from the Britain Elect site, which I think is useful, which looks at the issues around the economy, security, the NHS, you kind of, you name it, and whether we'd be better off or worse off, you know, leaving or staying and that sort of thing. I mean, looking at some of those numbers, what do you think stands out?
I think there are two competing arguments. There is, on the one side, the set of numbers that are what the Remain side are emphasising, which are picked up in two questions. Do you think Britain would be economically better or worse off? And do you think you personally would be better or worse off? And in both of those, there's a lead for worse. I can't say a majority or even a plurality, because no difference is quite a lot higher in the personal question. But both of those favour people thinking that the economics are against leaving. But balanced against that, and this will come as no surprise, is the immigration question, which has far larger lead, so 58% saying that there will be less immigration to Britain. So, I mean, I think what this comes down to is very much the framing of the referendum. Is the referendum about economics, or is it about society and immigration? And actually, I think to an extent, this is what I think it was Gordon Brown. I think he's published a book or something, or an essay, and had a piece. I think it was in the Guardian today, that essentially saying, look, you know, we need to bring this together and be making the sort of the society case as well as the economic case. Because you know, the point is, it's sort of, if it's an economic argument, that's great for Remain. If it's an immigration argument, it's great for Leave. I think these numbers are sort of what we expected in it.
I mean, what I want to pull out is this idea of the personal finances, because, so the question says, do you think you personally would be better or worse off if we left the European Union, or would it make no difference? So it gives them the three options. And at the moment, the score is 10% say better off, 21% say worse off, 47% say no difference. I suppose two ways of interpreting that. One is that we're twice as likely to say we'll be worse off than better off if we leave. But the other is that half of people say it won't make any difference, which is overwhelmingly the plurality, I suppose.
Yeah.
And it hasn't really changed over time. And the other thing that we do see in certain polls is, if you say you'll be 100 quid worse off, then people are more likely to vote one way or the other. So, yeah. I don't know, I mean, maybe it feels like actually the government are going to have to make the case much more powerfully about your own personal finances, because it doesn't seem to me that 20% thinking we'll be worse off if we leave the EU.
You and I had a bit of an argument, didn't we, the day that Osborne made the Treasury case for how many thousand each household was going to be. And I think you just found the numbers not very credible. And you know, this is coming from you, someone who is very engaged in politics, and you've got to imagine most people hearing here's a large number that the government says you're going to be worse off by. It's very hard to sort of get your head around that and to think, well, what does that actually mean, and do I believe them, and why should I take it seriously? And I think, to be honest, from the numbers there, your point's kind of vindicated that this is, I mean, you can look at those numbers as a real poor reflection on the Remain campaign, that only a third of people even think there's an argument to be had.
Well, yeah, and also 50%. So if we look at a different question about terrorism, which is a highly specific thing, do you think Britain would be more or less at risk from terrorism if we left the European Union, or do you think it'd make no difference? 14% say more risk from terrorism, 22% say less, 50% say no difference. So the way I would look at that again is that, you know, only about, what, 1 in 7 think we're at more risk from terrorism if we leave the EU. So I suppose the twin arguments that the Remain campaign, or at least Cameron, seems to be using at the moment is security and the economy. I think one of the messages he seems to have picked up from the general election is have message discipline and focus on communicating. But at the moment, I don't know that it's cutting through as well as you might like. At the same time, that doesn't mean that he shouldn't persist with those messages over the next month. And, you know, I wouldn't necessarily say that you should suddenly change tack. I mean, the other thing I would mention is that when you ask people who the most trusted voices are on the referendum, it's usually not politicians. It's usually businesses, which is a broad church, I appreciate. And also people like the IMF and Mark Carney, and to an extent, President Obama. So I just wonder whether, you know, these numbers aren't conclusive at the moment, but they're... Yeah, they're going in a direction that favours Remain still.
Yeah, I sort of feel, although those of us who are spending a lot of time engaging with the debate feel like it's been dragging on for eternity, and it's astonishing that people aren't really engaging with the arguments, you've got to think that most people are really not paying much attention yet. I seriously think it's sort of in a couple of weeks' time, when it's within a month to the election, that I would start looking at those numbers, and if they weren't moving, that's when I'd be more worried. I mean, part of the reason I think then they might not be moving, if people have been paying attention, is both sides have very much fought this campaign on what seems like quite a rapid reaction basis, that as soon as some numbers or some argument have come up, they have really tried to slam down the other side's arguments. So nothing has really stuck that strongly. I thought the Treasury's case for how much it costs was establishing figures that looked like they'd stick, because they weren't really rebutted immediately. But yeah, it doesn't feel like they've become established in the debate. And I suppose the other point is, you said, should he change tack? The truth is, where else could Remain side go on this? I mean, they can't make a case that the EU is a wonderful institution and the UK is going to be fantastically better off and it's peace and harmony. You know, all they can say credibly is we're going to be worse if we leave.
I don't think they can make the case that we're all friendly Europeans and shouldn't we all be nice and European together. I don't think there's that ideology. There's that island mentality, for good or bad, isn't there?
Yeah, I think that's right. Although, having said that, I do still feel that there is space for a very narrowly targeted campaign, sort of below the radar, aiming at some of the very strong Remainers who are no doubt feeling hugely underwhelmed by the campaign. People who are natural Green or Lib Dem voters, perhaps, to emphasise this is about Britain's internationalism and this is about us playing a part in the world and being connected with other countries and not being little Englanders and so on. And that, to be honest, I don't know if that's happening under the radar. That's kind of the point of under the radar.
So you're asking for a Tony Blair speech? I'm not sure that.
Yeah, Lembidopic perhaps for under the radar.
Oh God, that would be very under the radar, wouldn't it? Nick Clegg maybe.
Yeah. But so, you know, I mean, who knows? Maybe this is targeted Facebook campaigns that are already happening. But I feel like there are probably something in the region of 10%, 15% who could be more motivated to turn out with a campaign focused on that. But that campaign would be toxic for lots of swing voters. Mm. So it would have to be done very cautiously.
And let's talk a bit about the Leave campaign for the last sort of 5 minutes or so, because I suppose it sounds like we're both veering towards expecting a Remain vote. You've said you obviously want that. I mean, for me, I think it's, you know, I still come back to this point that there's been far less telephone polling than online polling. Now, again, I wouldn't say, you know, it's perfectly legitimate for reasons you've outlined earlier to say, I don't care. I mean, I think online is more reliable and therefore it is neck and neck, and that's fine. But I just wonder whether the narrative would be slightly different if we had a lot more telephone polls. I certainly think that's reasonable. But let's look at the Leave side and try and get the balanced view as how they would approach this now. I suppose there's this age-old debate where it seems very clear that immigration is their trump card to play. It's a big issue that the public care about a lot. The polling clearly says, you know, 58% think there'll be less immigration if we leave, 3% think more. So they clearly think there'll be an impact on immigration.
And of course we assume that people want less immigration, which I think is a fair assumption.
This idea of take control probably is not a bad line if you're going to think about that from a messaging perspective. But then that's not necessarily enough to get you over. You know, you might have the most enthusiastic people, the most likely to vote, the least likely to change their mind. You've got immigration, but is that enough to get to 51%, I don't know, or 50.01. I mean, presumably they've got to take on the economic argument, haven't they? I mean, or do you think that it's just really bang that immigration message home and hope turnout doesn't sort of...
Well, I suppose
Because it's a strategic decision, isn't it? You know, what's your message going to be?
But they can look at the numbers that we've just been talking about, can't they, and say, well, we've neutralised the economic argument because most people think it's not going to make any difference. Mm. So if that side, if the referendum isn't an economic question and it is instead an immigration question, then actually it's kind of open to us. So that works. And you know, one of the other numbers that I think takes a bit of interpreting is that we have another of these questions from YouGov is the impact on the NHS. And
yeah, this was surprising.
And so the answer isn't perhaps what I would have thought. It's 35% it say it would be good to leave for the NHS. 17% say bad to leave. 33% no difference. Now,
a lot of don't knows in there.
A lot of don't knows, but twice as many say it would be good rather than bad. Now, we briefly discussed whether this is TTIP. I'm pretty confident it's not, because I just don't think that many people have heard of it. I think it's an immigration thing. I think this is people and immigration, not about foreign doctors and nurses, but about people thinking that immigration in the EU puts pressure on the health service. Mm. If I was the Leave camp and I saw those numbers, I would be thinking, this is really, really encouraging, because it allows us to talk about immigration without talking about immigration. Because one of the problems, and you know, this is one of the fundamental problems for UKIP, that they can have a bunch of really individually popular policies, but if you're seen talking too much about something that's seen as a little bit nasty, then it kills you with too many swing voters. And the great thing about talking about the NHS for the Leave campaign is it relies on the anti-immigration sentiment, which clearly has a lot of credibility in the referendum, but it gets them to talk about something different. So if I was Remain and I was looking at that, I'd be thinking, this is a flank we've really got to shore up, because that feels like at the moment a more credible and useful attack space for Leave.
The messenger is going to be important there, though, too, because I mean, you think Nigel Farage isn't going to be a very good poster boy for the NHS, given his past comments on it, but then maybe Boris Johnson or someone else might be. But I mean, we've got these debates coming up, haven't we? There's a series of sort of question time debates. I think there's one in Wembley Arena. Can't remember if that's a BBC one or not, which looks like it's going to have two opposing Conservatives up against each other, or at least a Conservative on the Leave side, Nigel Farage, frozen out. I mean, it's very entertaining politics, isn't it? But do we think that the debates wouldn't necessarily make much difference, or do you think that could make a difference in a campaign as unique as this one? I mean, what do you think?
I'm really not convinced. I mean, firstly, I suppose I feel that debates can make a difference when it's very strongly about a personality, when people are clearly voting for individuals. So clearly, in 2010, Clegg was able to use debates to get himself onto the stage in a way that hadn't been the case before. I think 2015 showed us that doesn't necessarily have to be the case, and actually often debates are much more about reinforcing existing perceptions or giving people the opportunity to see what they already thought, and to emphasise that. But to be honest, you know, this is a debate that those who watch it will be looking for the issues and looking for the arguments. I think, as we've already talked about, the way the argument is being had in this referendum is so strongly about one side seeking to both sides seeking to rebut the other's arguments and evidence as quickly as possible, that I think we have to expect that the debates are going to be very much like that, and they're going to make for terrible viewing because of that, because it'll be extremely strongly people challenging one another's facts, and that I think is not going to help many people make up their minds. And given that we also don't have the opportunity for a personality to break out and to change things then it's sort of not really clear what difference that can make.
I mean, let's play a game to finish. So, I mean, you can have a one-on-one debate with a Leaver and a Remainer. Who do we think the best person, and I'm doing this on the fly, so we might agree or not, I don't know. Who do we think the best person to make the Leave case is in that debate? I mean, presumably Boris.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, so. Nigel Farage has got this interesting contradiction where he absolutely mullered Nick Clegg in these debates that they had last parliament.
Yeah.
But then he is a divisive guy.
He is, and I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I don't know how it would be done, but I've often felt that the Leave camp is running a campaign very strongly focused on their base. On the kind of ideal of a Leave supporter, with talk about sovereignty feels like nonsense for most people, and I just feel like every time they argue about that, they're wasting time. And yet, they're doing pretty well relatively in the polls. Farage would be the sort of choice of the person that would fit in with the way I feel the campaign, their side of the campaign has gone. Johnson feels very strongly like the obvious person to reach beyond the heartland of the Leave campaign.
Yeah, and then maybe the most fascinating debate is who's the best person to be the advocate for Remain, because it doesn't sound like it's going to be David Cameron, but then I suppose if you're advising the Prime Minister, do you want him there front and centre, being the guy that's head of the country for good or bad, whether you support him or not? He's the Prime Minister of the country saying we must remain on primetime TV. Feels quite powerful. But at the same time, you're really putting him out there and making it about him, aren't you?
Yeah, but in the end, this is about him.
It doesn't sound like it's going to be him in this debate.
It's interesting, actually, in one of the Ashcroft focus groups quite recently, there was some talk about Cameron having to resign if this happens, if Leave won. And apparently people were baffled, couldn't get their heads around the idea of why he would be. It just seems like complete nonsense. Why he would have to resign. Which is an interesting view from outside the Westminster bubble.
Yeah.
But anyway, I mean, look, it's about him personally. He has to, accept that this is about him personally. Personally, if I were picking someone for the Remain side who was taking on Boris Johnson, I'd go for the other Johnson.
Alan Johnson. Future Labour Party leader Alan Johnson. I can't keep banging that drum until it. Those days are gone. I mean, that would make sense, I suppose, when you consider, if you accept the argument that getting the Labour vote out is going to be really, really important.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that he is able to be any more statesmanlike than Cameron. I don't think he's able to be any better at staring down the cameras and saying, look, I'm relying on you to secure the future of the country. But the Remain side need the votes of lots of people who really don't like Cameron. And that is a problem. And Johnson is going to be, and the Leave side is going to be locking up the votes of lots of people who do like Cameron. So, or did until the referendum campaign anyway. So I'm just not really sure. Although I think he's probably the best media performer and best debater that Remain have, I think in terms of the audience that Remain have to appeal to now, I could very, very well see the argument for him not being the face.
I mean, at the risk of playing politics with it, I think there's a big argument if you're Jeremy Corbyn to try and be the person that's on that stage. Now, this won't be Jeremy Corbyn's decision, but, you know, leaving aside the difficulties that he's had and the electability question which people have, isn't what better way to announce your arrival on the national stage in a way that maybe challenges current perceptions of you than for Jeremy Corbyn to go up against Boris Johnson? Maybe it's a double-edged sword, maybe it's a disaster waiting to happen, but I just think if you're saying that the person on the Remain side has to be a Labour person, which sounds like you're chuckling away at me there. And it sounds like that's what they're saying, that it's going to be a Labour person rather than a Conservative, because they don't want this Conservative civil war going on. Why wouldn't the leader of the Labour Party do it? You sound sceptical.
I'm trying to be serious. I think what a double-edged sword would be if it had, I don't know, a dagger for a handle and a chainsaw for a hilt or something. I mean, I just think that Corbyn would be absolutely mullered by Johnson. I think he would look pedestrian. He would look out of touch. Even I just think it would be a disaster. And I think his people must know that. And look, he's managed to keep himself largely separate from the campaign, which I think is part of the reason why the campaign might be struggling to get Labour supporters out. If he were to be front and centre then suddenly he starts being exposed. Suppose he goes up against Johnson, has a disastrous night, and then Leave win, then suddenly it becomes credible to say that his job has to be on the line as well. Because he's attached himself to it.
If he didn't have a disaster, and I suppose it sort of depends on what you think, but if he didn't have a disaster, suddenly he's got a way of uniting the Labour Party, because everyone's going to, like, whether you're a moderate or a Corbynite or whatever, you're going to support him in that scenario.
Yeah.
And actually, the British public, you know, maybe it's not likely, but then it's a way of maybe challenging perceptions.
The public would rally behind him.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but, you know, maybe it's a case of, look, you know, this is challenging the perceptions that I've read about how bad he is.
I get that, but there is surely a massive high risk there that, okay, so it's completely true if, but the word if in your sentence is doing an awful lot of work, that you're saying that he can go up against the best crowd-pleasing debater and hold his own when he is not a good debater. And his entire career will be on the line for that. Mm. That sounds like a risk that would be pretty brave to take.
I mean, Johnson versus Johnson feels like the, as you put it, feels like the most sensible choice, I'm sure. I mean, it's certainly something to look out for. You know, who knows how much impact the debates have, but it's certainly one that, if it is a close race, you certainly don't want it to tip the balance one way or another. I mean, let's see what happens in the next coming weeks. I'm sure it's something that we're going to revisit in the flesh. I mean, Leo, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the politicalbetting.com Polling Matters show. Stay tuned next week, and we should be back in the flesh. I'm sure that the Brexit debate will come up time and time again. No music by popular demands. Pollinate by Kirk Pearson is dead, thanks to a focus group of one. Thanks to a focus group of one on social media. But, you know, there'll be more episodes in the coming week, both on the audio and visual. And thanks for listening. And please do share, like, comment, you know, subscribe on iTunes and all the rest of it. It really does help get the audience up. So thanks very much for listening.